Hello, my name is David Sutton, Advisory Principal at GHJ, and I am delighted to welcome everyone to the first in a series of podcasts that will cover various topics and themes over the course of the year. GHJ has developed a business resiliency journey map that details the journey from responding to adversity, to recovery, and to rebuilding, and the various steps and tools along that path. We recognise that different organisations are at different points in the journey and that the pandemic has resulted in disruption as well as the need and opportunity to pivot and potentially differentiate. And that is where we have an exciting guest today to share and reflect on their remarkable journey. So with that, I'm joined by Danella Wilson. And Danella, I will hand over to you to introduce yourself and our very special guest.
Thank you very much, David. I'm Danella Wilson, audit partner at GHJ, and I lead our nonprofit practice. Today, I'm speaking with Michael Burdell, Chief Operating Officer at the Peterson Automotive Museum. Michael has a background in business development, integrated marketing and strategy, as well as a passion for technology, skills that were certainly put to good use over the past 13 months. Similar to all arts and culture organizations that had to shut their doors, the Peterson Automotive Museum was significantly impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic. However, over the past 13 months, the museum began executing on a digital transformation plan and launched innovative virtual programming that has expanded viewership beyond traditional geographies. Prepared to open as soon as the green light was given, the museum was also the first museum in Los Angeles County to reopen its doors. So how did they do it? And how will the lessons learned impact the museum's future? Michael, as you reflect back to March of 2020 and the Safer at Home public order that closed the museum, what do you consider was key to the success of the museum's response?
Well, Danella, thank you so much for having me today, David. It's a pleasure to speak with you both. The museum really has a great team. I think that's where it all starts. Our team is constantly facing new challenges, both prior to the pandemic and obviously with the pandemic. But our team is very entrepreneurial. We were closed for 14 months during our major renovation back in 2014 and 15. And that really set the tone as a new business. Essentially, we were given this new opportunity to act fast and take action. And so when the pandemic hit, our team, didn't waste any time and quickly pivoted to, virtual opportunities where we could continue to fulfill our mission to preserve and present on the presentation side, obviously. And we started doing tours of the galleries. But really, it was that entrepreneurial mindset that allowed us to, I would say, weather the pandemic during our closure.
And I think when we chatted a couple of weeks ago, you also shared that, jumping in to try and find solutions right away without maybe having the perfect solution, maybe it wasn't the most elegant of solutions if you were doing virtual tours, but it was an opportunity to build on what you learned and be very responsive to the museum visitors as well. Maybe you can Absolutely. Talk a little bit about that process of building and learning constantly.
Totally. Yeah, no, it was, it was myself and a few others that literally picked up a camera and began, filming the vault. And the vault has the most mystique in the museum. So it was a really kind of exciting hook. But yeah, the equipment we were using was, I would say, not the correct equipment. We were probably not the right ones operating it, but for the most part, we delivered really strong stories and messaging, through the content we were creating. We learned really quickly that there was an audience that was eager, just as eager to continue to engage with us, in a virtual capacity. And, we took that concept and, continued to refine it during the pandemic. So it didn't start off how we imagined it. It definitely started off in a much rougher form, but it grew. And I would say it's at a point where, we're really proud of the production that we've created. And that journey, without taking that first step, you know, we wouldn't be where we are today. And we've had a larger impact because of that first step. And I think that's the biggest takeaway is, you know, we were able to, you know, accomplish so much. We were able to grow outside of our regular audience, you know, into an international audience because it was really uncomfortable in the beginning.
And you have a background in technology, and obviously all these platforms are really demanding of a certain level of technology. Can you speak a little bit to the investment and the commitment that that you made to investing in technology?
Absolutely. I mean, when we went through the renovation, it was kind of a blank canvas for us and an opportunity to elevate the museum, and I don't want to say future-proof it, but at least create an infrastructure that could grow into future technologies. So that really helped us, you know, with all of the platforms that we've used during the pandemic. You know, just the fact that we have a really strong fiber connection into the building with a Wi-Fi infrastructure and cell phone boosters so that we have good signals when we do live streams and, you know, sharing of any content. You know, uploading, these huge videos that we were doing before, we wouldn't have been able to do that prior to the renovation of the museum. But also just the platforms that are used today to share that content, you know, all of the social media platforms that are available, all of the editing suites. You know, we're very fortunate to have relationships with some of the bigger providers of those platforms and creators of those platforms that have allowed us to share our content, you know, with a global audience.
Yeah, and certainly, you know, being prepared, you referred to the importance of being entrepreneurial and forward thinking and having the board leading with strategy and their governance, giving the green light to really go ahead and explore the digital transformation even before the pandemic hit really did set you up well, I think. You had the green light to go ahead and you were able to jump in right away and address it. So what were some of the challenges that you had to overcome related to staffing, one, and then also engaging with the museum visitors?
Yeah, so I mean, when everything closed, you know, we were really quick to message, you know, our core audience, our members, our donors that, you know, we were going to be closed and we really didn't know how long we were going to be closed for. So, you know, it was a journey we were going to, you know, go through together. And I think that's one of the bigger ones, just the communication of letting everybody know that we don't have the answer, but when we have the answer, we'll let you know. But, you know, we, from a staffing side, I would say we were fortunate to be able to hold on to, you know, almost all of our full-time staff and, you know, repurpose positions to help us in this, you know, transition to a virtual environment. And there was definitely positions that we created as well. You know, we were not a production company and we pretty much became a production company during this. So there were specialized positions that we had to, you know, bring on. But a lot of it was a learning lesson. You know, we had time to train employees how to use new technologies, you know, and what the vision was for, you know, sharing the museum's collection and its stories. And you mentioned the board, which was a big one. Is it's not very traditional that, you know, a board all comes together and I would say agrees on a completely different direction than has been followed for, you know, 25 years. So a huge credit to our board to, you know, basically give us free rein to share the collection in this way, you know, in a completely untraditional form. And they were extremely supportive. It was pretty much whatever resource, you know, we needed, we were able to get immediately. And, you know, taking that action quick allowed us to kind of, I would say, lead in regards to museums. You know, the day we closed was, I think, the second week of March, like the 14th or 15th. And the 16th, we were live streaming, you know, the vault. And again, that's quick action from the board to say, we trust you, you know, you're able to do this. Again, it's a big A/B test, right? But if it works, you know, we'll continue to refine. And so that was you know how we went. We started with the vault, and then we began to expand into galleries, and then after that, we actually you know tapped our constituents who have you know pretty spectacular stories themselves, And then we leverage that to get more stories. So one of our goals has always been to, you know, reach an international audience with our content. And we've done through you know, traditional media and social media in a passive way. You know, we have shared our content with that audience, but we've never been able to do it in an interactive way. And so we started the first Global Cars and Coffee, where individuals would submit videos to us. Our editor would edit them together into a compilation, and we would share it live through YouTube and Facebook. And our first one, you know, we had submissions from Brazil, Australia, the UK.
Wow, incredible.
Japan. It was amazing. I mean, honestly, like, you never know how that first initiative is going to go. And then as soon as the response started to happen, it was, you know, amazing. It's something we're continuing today because it gives us an engagement level that we didn't have before. So it's extremely exciting for us to have this terrible thing, I hate to say it, but have this terrible thing birth a new opportunity that we're able to continue and grow even after all of this, you know, subsides.
So, yeah, so a creative challenge that you really rose up and adapted to incredibly well. And I think that focus on experimentation and the ability to do that, getting that green light to engage in that experimentation and innovation was really key there. And you also had mentioned before that, you know, now you might have had a museum visitor for a couple of hours and now you have them only for 15 minutes, the length of the podcast, essentially. Yeah. So how do you find that hook? Absolutely. I guess it's also key to that, and trying to make something meaningful in the short time that you have that museum visitor to keep them returning. So how has the pandemic, you know, thinking back on, you know, what you just said about the tremendous challenges, but, you know, being able to innovate and adapt and respond to that, you know, as you look ahead, and how has the pandemic maybe changed the business model for the museum going forward? And what have you really learned over the past 13 months that would make the museum even more sustainable into the future?
Yeah, I mean, we've been, I would say, slowly working towards where we are today over a long period of time. And, you know, the pandemic accelerated that growth in the digital space that we always wanted to get into. You know, when something is a kind of a back burner project, and then it gets brought to, you know, the front burner, and it's the only thing that you can really pay attention to, it allowed us to develop the platform into something that is absolutely going to be a sustainability strategy for us. You know, we were able to generate pretty tremendous revenue in a short period of time off of our virtual activities, both through, you know, traditional content, video content, and also through kind of interactive virtual events and even some games. We did some virtual escape rooms, you know, in our vault during the pandemic.
Wow.
And so, you know, it's something that we will pay equal attention to that we do to our biggest revenue stream, which is, you know, people coming in the museum and traditional admissions, because it's growing so rapidly. And now it's really on a growth curve where you have to pay attention to it. I think that's one of the big things is, to be successful in the digital space, you have to be consistent. You know, all of the platforms work on algorithms that reward consistency and engagement. And so now that we've begun that, we can't really stop without rewinding our progress. So, you know, we've seen the potential, you know, over the course of the year, you know, we had a little over 12 million views on our channel and close to 100 million impressions. And for a channel that had just started, you know, that was huge for us, especially with little to no investment in it, you know, just repurposing the existing team that we have. So we see a lot in that value. And again, the biggest one is our audience, because we're core to Los Angeles, is a Southern California audience. You know, 80% of our admissions to the museum come within a 40 or 50 mile radius. And so, you know, the fact that we're able to really expand beyond that, you know, both nationally and internationally, you know, shows where our shortfall was prior and gives us the runway to grow in the future with the digital space. So I would say the same amount of attention we spent, you know, trying to get people into our physical space, we are now going to spend trying to engage in the digital space.
Yeah, makes complete sense. And seeing as I know many nonprofit organizations are going to be thinking about how they structure their gala or their special event this year, and could you share a little bit about how your experience was last year in the pandemic with your virtual gala and your thinking and plans for your next one?
Absolutely. Yeah. So we did a fully virtual gala as it was the only option we had, and it was immensely successful. I mean, I don't know if we'll ever get another opportunity like that, where everybody is fully adopted to being at home. But I think the nice thing is it really showed the support. You know, a gala is meant to not only entertain its guests, but obviously raise the most funds for the organization. And because the costs were so low for us to hold it virtually, there was no infrastructure we had to build. There was no tent. There was no, catering. Everybody got like a nice little package to enjoy, during the show. But, the cost of having an in-person event is well into the six figures, sometimes into the low seven figures for the larger galas of 500, 600, 700 people. And so by eliminating those costs, we were able to have the most successful, monetary successful gala in our history. And it showed us that, for the people who can't attend the gala but still want to support the organization, we can provide them with something of the entertainment value in a virtual space. And so moving forward, I think we'll always have some kind of hybrid model where we have a smaller in-person event, especially this year. And then a digital offering that allows them to still enjoy the content that's shared that evening, but not necessarily attend. And I think for introverts like myself, if I was able to attend the gala, to be able to do one in a way from the comfort of my home, I think that's a really enjoyable offering, and still get all the benefits of the organization being a success. So it taught us a very valuable lesson in we don't have to always plan for having a full house. It can be a smaller full house and still be equally as enjoyable.
And that was another good example of responding to what you learned from your constituents. And that concludes. We now come to the end of our podcast. And I want to thank you so much, Michael. This has been incredibly enlightening. And to our listeners, I encourage you to head to peterson.org to experience the full virtual museum and vault tour. And we look forward to having you join us again for the next podcast in our Disruption and Resilience series.
Thank you so much.